This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Walk Wide Way, the international LGBT news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show with you tonight and taking you around the globe one country at a time in the studio tonight. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Matt.
Dean's here.
Buenos dias.
Oh, very good. Hello, Sarah.
I want to say Spanish because I'm trying to learn, but good evening.
By the end of tonight, maybe.
Yep.
That's a bit of a hint as to where we're going. Now, some of our listeners will have done the tourist thing and travelled across the USA-Mexico border, but few will have probably gone to the places that we're going tonight. The old saying that a picture tells a thousand words certainly rings true in a book recently published on the lives of people living with HIV and AIDS in Tijuana, Mexico.
So we're asking, how is being in a Mexican jail better for someone with HIV than living on the outside?
With so many prevention and treatment programs now available, why is HIV spreading amongst key populations in the Mexican border town?
And how can it be that two sides of the same fence provide starkly different treatment and support for people living with HIV and AIDS? To give us an insight into the struggles and triumphs of people living with HIV in Tijuana, Mexico, tonight we speak with John Cohen. He's the author and one half of a storytelling duo with photographer Malcolm Linton, who have published the book Tomorrow is a Long Time on HIV in Tijuana. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
And people made makeshift shelters along the riverbanks in what they called ñungos, which basically were like items you'd find in a garbage dump that you'd stack up to have four posts and a blanket over it. And the riverbanks are silty and filthy, filled with human excrement, lice, rats, used syringes.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Tonight we're starting off in South Africa. South Africa has just launched its first LGBT streaming television channel.
Woo!
The crowd roared.
Well, it's something to be excited about. Pride TV is a video on demand platform and costs 79 rands per month, or bargain, 790 per year. The rand is about the same as the Australian dollar. Subscribers can access the service through broadband on their smart TVs, computers, tablets, you know, any old device that's using iOS or Android systems.
So this is a gay TV station, basically?
Yes. But it doesn't broadcast, but it broadcasts digitally, if you know what I mean. So it's one of those streaming services that we're probably not allowed to mention here on Joy.
Excellent. But that's good for, certainly for South Africa, good for Africa too, probably.
They provide services such as fiction documentaries, although 65% of their content is gay male focused, with 35% of it looking at lesbian and transgender themes.
It is one of those challenging things in putting together a programming for LGBT community. I know certainly people like Melbourne Queer Film Festival have the same challenges of trying to match the numbers and the dollars with diversity and making sure everybody gets a look in.
Well, South Africa is the only African country that has legalized same-sex marriage quite a long time ago. But in terms of, you know, services on the ground for the LGBT community, not so many. So this is a really good step ahead.
It's a good step forward. They're going to be adding regularly big screen classics, independent films and TV series in the future.
And talk shows, of course.
Only America once. Now on to Nepal, where about 1,000 members of the LGBT community and their supporters marched in the capital of Kathmandu on Friday. They're demanding equality and the implementation of their rights under their country's constitution. Participants in the parade said they still don't have equal rights despite a constitutional ban on criminalisation on the basis of sexuality and discrimination. So the charter was adopted last year, but it's not been fully implemented by the government because of opposition from minority groups, they say.
Would they be the church groups by
any
chance?
Yeah, I wonder. I imagine it's the same.
We should say Nepal actually has been fairly progressive in terms of the rest of the region, but they're still it's almost two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah, they've got the legal framework in place, but they don't seem to somehow kind of back that up with
cultural support.
I think it might be because the banners aren't quite pithy enough. So their banner said, "We should not be deprived of our rights. We demand implementation of the rights guaranteed by the new constitution."
Yeah, not exactly catchy, but true.
No. Yep. Among the supporters in the march was the US ambassador to Nepal, Alenia Teplitz. And the parade has been held annually for the past 2 years as a part of a Hindu festival.
A Hindu festival where people are traditionally allowed to wear clothing worn by other genders. Random.
Across to the USA now, where a 51-year-old bisexual man is being sent back to his native Jamaica after a three-judge appeals court panel upheld a ruling that stated the man was in fact not bisexual. The earlier faulty ruling was from a federal immigration judge who didn't believe that the man who came from the USA in 1999 was actually bisexual because he'd been married to a woman and fathered children.
Presumably the judge was having problems with the concept that bisexuals do actually have sex with people other than the same sex, and that can lead to marriage and children sometimes.
Yeah, I think they're misunderstanding.
Not sure he's got the concept at all.
Yeah, a basic fact of bisexuality there. Were there other arguments they used?
Well, the man, Ray Fuller, he actually appealed, but this three-judge panel of the US Appeals Court, the Seventh Circuit, upheld the ruling 2-1.
Oh, close.
Although they focused more on inconsistencies in his testimony. One dissenter on the panel, frequent LGBT rights proponent Judge Richard Posner, roundly criticised the lower court judge's take on Fuller. Apparently, the judge doesn't know what the meaning of bisexual is.
It's also a little bit odd that anyone would try and argue that they're anything other than heterosexual if they're in danger of being sent back to Jamaica. Let's be honest.
It's true. And in brief, in India, for the first time ever, a pro-transgender Hindu organisation will hold post-death rituals for all transgender people who have died in recent years.
Mm. And in New Zealand, stats show that 2,118 same-sex couples have married since marriage equality was legalised in 2013. And over 970 travelled from abroad to get married.
Oh, so jealous.
Mm.
And in Iraq, a prominent Iraqi Shiite cleric has banned his followers from committing violence against LGBT people.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
I am Bisi Alimi from Nigeria. For those who say homosexuality is a Western import to Africa, I am a proof that you can be proudly African and gay and fabulous. And I'm on Worldwide Wave.
A message in on Facebook. It's about the story that's been, obviously, same-sex marriage is a big issue here in Australia and the plebiscite generating lots and lots of chatter. The story that it will be put off till February 17, William says, we pay these fools in federal government and they know how to waste money and spend our money but can't take a vote. Bunch of morons. Tough talking there, William.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Tonight we are in Mexico as we look into HIV and AIDS and the people living with it. Let's take a look at all the fascinating facts about Mexico. Now, actually, same-sex sexual acts were legalised in 1871.
I beg your pardon? 1871.
Yeah, because of the French.
The French, of course the French. It not the British.
Not the British, no. We would have banned the whole thing.
And at the same time, they equalised the age of consent, although discrimination laws, anti-discrimination laws, did not come into place until 2003.
And they're still not really upheld very well.
So it still needs to be tested.
Yeah, there was a study a little while ago, and they found that 7 out of 10, it's actually HIV-positive people, had lost their jobs due to their status.
Indeed.
And so that's pretty discriminatory.
Investigate that a lot more tonight. Civil unions and same-sex marriage are being performed and are legal in a number of states within Mexico, but not Mexico as the whole.
And it's quite complicated because you've got states that actually have legalized it. You've then got states that have got Supreme Court judgments with it. And then you've got some that just have to recognize it because everyone else is doing it.
And as far as HIV and AIDS goes, the epidemic is concentrated primarily amongst men who have sex with men, sex workers and their clients, and people who inject drugs. In fact, HIV prevalence amongst men who have sex with men is between 10 and 13% as of 2006, and we're going to hear a lot more about that with our guest tonight.
Joy.
John Cohen is a storyteller. With his photographer friend, Malcolm Linton, the pair have shared the stories of HIV from around the world since the 1990s. Their latest book, which is titled Tomorrow is a Long Time, shows us the people, the places, and the problems of living with HIV and AIDS in Tijuana, Mexico. We asked John how this book came about.
I've covered HIV/AIDS for Science Magazine since 1990, so I've been doing it a very long time, and I covered it before I started at Science. And I have worked with the same photographer for many years in probably 30 different countries. And we both wanted to really stay put in one place for a long time and see how things changed over time. Because as a magazine journalist, you're often forced to do a story by reporting on something for a day or a week or at best a month. And the truth about anything occurs over time. And so we had done a story together in Tijuana about the epidemic there and the response, and we thought this would be a great place to look at in depth. In part because I live nearby, I can make day trips to Tijuana. It's about 45 minutes from my house. And Malcolm Linton, the photographer I've worked with, is bilingual and had lived in many Latin American countries and wanted to live in Tijuana. So that was the impetus.
Tell us a bit about, a lot of the book focuses around El Boro. Tell us what that is and I guess describe it a bit for us.
So El Boro is the region right up against the Tijuana-San Diego border. And it's a river canal that at the time we were doing the book had about 1,000 people living in it. It's a concrete river. So they took the Tijuana River and made concrete banks because it kept flooding. Most all of the people were deported from the United States. So they were born in Mexico but raised in the United States, often when they moved there when they were a year or 2 years old. And then they were deported for everything from trivial automobile issues to serious crimes. And the community that lived in El Boro had a lot of people who were using heroin, and heroin was openly injected and openly sold in El Boro as well. And people made makeshift shelters along the riverbanks in what they called ñungos, which basically were like items you'd find in a garbage dump that you'd stack up to have four posts and a blanket over it and maybe a kid's tricycle or something holding up a part of the shelter. And the riverbanks are silty and filthy, filled with human excrement, lice, rats, used syringes, all sorts of trash, all sorts of debris. So it's one of the most disgusting places to live that I've ever seen. And people made a community out of it.
John Cohen, author of the book Tomorrow is a Long Time on the HIV response in Tijuana in Mexico. And coming up, we hear some of the personal stories of El Boro and how life is often better inside jail. You're on the Worldwide Wave.
Bring joy to the world. Listen to us everywhere. Download the Joy smartphone app now at joy.org.au.
Hello, I'm Micaela, the producer of El Hombre Nuevo, speaking from Uruguay for Worldwide Wave.
A few more messages coming in off Facebook with the story about Indonesia's LGBT community, which is under attack. And in fact, we had a show on this just bit over a month ago. You can find that podcast on our website at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Lots of anger around that attack, and Didi Otomo, who is standing strong trying to fight for rights there. Also comments around the Minister for Ethics in Uganda. That's not a joke. That's a real title. Who has made some claims about gay men and being rapist. And Andrew says, sorry, he's not my type.
There's an amazing video where they've done an audio with this guy where he says just horrifying things about gay men, but then it just looks like, yeah, they've done one of those auto tunes.
If you want to read the article, it is on our Facebook page. So we posted it just a few days ago, I think. And it's all about how they're buying a machine from South Korea. I think it's South Korea that will, convert. It's
outrageous.
It is. You're thinking this is a government minister. Like, how could he be saying these things? It's so crazy.
Back in the day, I don't know if you've ever seen The Last King of Scotland, Idi Amin used to get people, his paratroopers, to practice by jumping off slides. So it's not exactly high tech.
Didn't he also feed his enemies to crocodiles, or is that an urban legend?
Oh, I have no idea.
Quite possibly, but we're not actually in Uganda tonight. We are, in fact, in Mexico.
John Cohen has been telling us about drug use in Tijuana, and we asked how significant this issue was for transmitting HIV.
So one of the reasons we spent so much time in El Bordo is because people who share syringes all around the world have one of the highest rates of HIV infection. Australia has been a leader in the harm reduction movement, which encourages giving people who use clean needles and syringes and offering them things like methadone substitution for opiates. Australia even has a legal safe injection site in Sydney that I visited before. El Bordo has nothing like any of that. So the risk of transmission from a dirty needle, as you might imagine, is higher than any other way that you can transmit HIV. Plus, a lot of the people who were living in the canal, if they were women, they were often selling sex to support their habits or to support their boyfriend's habits. There also was a lot of sex being sold by men. So the risk factors in El Bordo were high on several levels. There's also abundant evidence that people who don't have homes are at higher risk of HIV. And El Bordo is the definition of homelessness.
If this is such a hot spot, what is preventing authorities, be it health departments or whoever, from providing some support, providing needle exchange, those types of services?
So there was a robust needle exchange program that was funded by the Global Fund. And the Global Fund is a international mechanism that countries apply to it like a bank and say, give us a grant, here's what we're going to do with the money. But countries are then expected to make a transition from that money into their own government funds supporting programs. So Mexico received Global Fund money to do needle exchange programs all over the country, and they had a very aggressive program in El Bordo, all over Tijuana. But then Mexico's income status rose too high for Global Fund grants, and the grants were cut, and Mexico, as a government, federally and also state and local money, didn't come in to fill in the gap. So they went from programs that were delivering needles and syringes 6 days a week and on the order of thousands to one day a week on the order of about 750.
It seems somewhat cruel. I mean, El Bordo is literally meters away from the border with USA, and it seems somewhat cruel that if somebody was born just a kilometre away, the prognosis for both their HIV risk and also treatment would be completely different.
Yeah, that's one of the starkest things about Tijuana, is you can see downtown San Diego from the hills of Tijuana. It's right there. And indeed, if you're living with HIV or at risk of HIV in San Diego, your health is going to be better. It's you have many, many advantages that will either prevent you from becoming infected or that will help you if you do become infected. I mean, that's the reality of the border in every aspect of life, not simply with disease. There's a very poor community living right across the border from a fairly wealthy community. One of the other reasons we did the book is because there's a push now globally to end AIDS epidemics in specific locales because of all the scientific advances that have occurred. Antiretroviral drugs, they work really well. They keep people alive for decades. And antiretroviral drugs also, if people take them regularly, reduce the virus in people so significantly that they're highly unlikely to transmit to anyone else. So you combine both the treatment and prevention power of antiretroviral drugs alone, and you know, you're halfway toward the goal of stopping the spread of the virus and saving the lives of people who are infected. On top of that, there are other advances that have been proven scientifically. People who are uninfected can take antiretroviral drugs in the same way you might take malarial medication before going to a malarial region to prevent yourself from developing an infection. There's also, and Australia has been a world leader in this, abundant evidence that providing people with harm reduction strategies like the ones I mentioned, in addition to offering them counseling and offering them housing, can bring spread in people who inject drugs to a halt. Australia doesn't have any problem with HIV being spread by injecting drug users. That's just gone away. Yes, it happens, but it's a very rare event. So all of this put together offers a really, really powerful strategy to bringing the spread of HIV to a halt and to saving lives. And what Tijuana shows and what we found over the few years that we did this project was that the response is so very fractured in Tijuana that none of that is happening in a coordinated way. And if progress is being made with these new tools, it's really incremental. And Tijuana looks like many places I've visited in the world. I don't mean to hold Tijuana up as an exception. I wish that were so. There are loads of places that have really lackluster leadership when it comes to HIV and AIDS and really faulty responses.
One of the stories I did see there was about Oscar, who was a man who found out he was HIV positive while he was in jail. And it seems that he actually got better help, both with drugs and care inside jail, than he would have on the outside. Is that a fair claim?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad irony all around the world that if you're incarcerated, you often end up getting better health care than you get on the outside. You're also the definition of captive. And so, you know, doctors can make sure you are receiving your medication, and they can even make sure you're taking it, or they can go a long way toward making sure you're taking it. Oscar's a very interesting case study, and the book tells the story of about 25 different people over time. When he moved to Tijuana, he both sold sex as a gay man during the day, and at night he would transition into a transgender sex worker. And he had a very serious crystal meth addiction. So he was at extremely high risk for HIV. We knew that. He knew that. And he ended up being arrested for crystal meth. And then we went into the prison with a group, an LGBT group, doing testing in the prison, and while we were there, we knew he was in there. They allowed us to meet with Oscar, and he had learned his status from that LGBT testing group, not from the prison healthcare system. And they were helping him and monitoring him, and the prison did then link him to care, though it wasn't clear to me that he was getting the antiretroviral medication he needed. That the last time I saw him, that was still a bit murky. Which is another major issue in Tijuana, is the way drugs have been doled out to people. It's often incredibly illogical.
John Cohen there, author of the book Tomorrow is a Long Time, speaking about life in Tijuana, Mexico. We've got more coming up with John. That issue of, it just blows me away, you're almost better off in jail. If you're HIV positive in Mexico, get in jail and you'll actually get better care than you will on the outside.
Due to poor leadership, really, from politicians is pretty much what John's saying.
Yeah, and that coordination of HIV services, bringing together all the pieces. The pieces are there, but it's kind of, you know, they're strewn about and not collected together.
It's strange because treatment is free in Mexico. They've got 57 specialised clinics to actually deal with the problem.
Dispense and look after people.
I love the fact that there's an LGBT run or group who is actually the ones who have gone in and helped this person, Oscar, I think it shows what citizens should do all around the world. Like, it's in our hands. We can't trust our... Sorry, I'm going to
can't
sound like...
Can't wait for the government.
We can't wait for the government.
Drive things forward. Yeah, good point. Fair point. One of the other issues that comes up to do with Mexican women, they are at increased risk of HIV because they're often unable to negotiate condom use, and the prevalence of domestic violence in Mexico, the reports are anything from 30 to 60%.
And this goes back to, if you ask to use a condom with your partner, then you're seen as being not faithful and therefore you get domestic abuse. Yet they've shown that 15 to 50% of married men are having sex outside of their partnerships with the women. So, I mean, it's perfectly reasonable that they should ask for condom use.
There was a study in 2011 in Mexico that found that over 90% of those that reported as HIV or AIDS was out of sexual transmission. So it wasn't the...
Yeah, so injecting drugs aren't the biggest problem there.
But they are. I think they're a significant problem in certain parts, and certainly the areas that John was working in around Tijuana and El Bordo. You know, it's obviously a huge area. The issue of the Global Fund is an interesting one. So this is a big bucket of money that rich countries put in to a shared fund, which is then given to projects and countries to help them combat AIDS, but it's on the condition that it's a kickstart fund. So you get it first off, but then the government has to pick up the tab as it becomes normal business, I guess you'd sort of say.
Yeah, I think it's also based on the country's economic wealth. So whilst they're still in the lowest bracket of economic wealth, then they'll keep getting the Global Fund. But as they get richer, then they should be taking on more of the health burden so that they're more invested in keeping it going.
And that's what John was saying. Mexico's just GDP went up and all of a sudden they became ineligible, and the political will to allocate money from that newfound wealth was just not there.
And I think that's a problem throughout the world, is that people don't care about injecting drug users. Especially, that's a really hard sell.
That is for politicians, certainly, yeah. Isn't it? This issue of, touched on it slightly, but stigma and discrimination is another challenge in, I guess, any society. Stigma around people having HIV, discrimination around LGBT communities, but also people living with HIV and AIDS. That just makes the fight even harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff happening in Mexico that I just thought was really horrifying.
There was the one study done by a non-government organisation that found that HIV patients actually had a sign saying HIV AIDS positive above their beds.
Yeah.
So they're being stigmatised actually in the medical system.
Not good at all. Tonight we are in Tijuana, Mexico, looking at life with HIV and AIDS. You're on World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, my name is Hope Matumbo from the Multicultural Health and Support Service, and you're listening to the World Wide Wave. That's how people do it.
Tonight we are in Mexico speaking to John Cohen about people living with HIV/AIDS in Tijuana. Given that John has created many books on this subject across the world, we asked him what experience stayed with him after finishing the book.
There are several. I mean, I've covered HIV so long, for so long, that there's not much that surprises me other than the individuals I meet and their commitment to staying alive and the length they go to stay alive. Most everyone wants to be healthy, regardless. I think one of the most startling things about the book was how forthcoming people were in letting us into their lives and telling their stories. We made sure that everyone who was party to this project we were doing fully understood what we were doing and wanted to be part of it. And there was this remarkable day where Malcolm and I went around with the book after we had printed it and handed it out to people in the book who were so proud to be part of this and so proud to have their stories told. And people wanted to be heard. They wanted to be seen as human. And so many of these populations, in scientific terms, so many of these communities are referred to as marginalized groups, whether they're using drugs or selling sex or they're gay men or transgender women, whatever it is, they're called marginalized. And I came to see them not so much as being marginalized, but as being hated. And they were, to a person, they were grateful that we presented them in a compassionate way that was not judging them, that was just pointing out their health risks and their health status and the challenges they had. So I was most surprised by the people we met who were either infected or at high risk and how they opened up to us and how they led their life.
The book is Tomorrow is a Long Time. The author is John Cohen. Thanks for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Thanks so much for having me.
I just love the passion that he has for not just his craft of telling stories, but also for HIV and AIDS. They've done multiple books together, the photographer and himself, and all dealing with HIV in different parts of the world and bringing the people stories to life.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? And he said, you know, people enjoy being heard. Well, of course. It's brilliant. Otherwise, we don't hear the stories. In research, you do call them marginalised, not Oscar.
And we have on previous versions of this show, we've mentioned that it's actually putting a face to the issue.
It's hard to argue against a face, isn't
yes.
it? It's a
Once
real
you actually
person.
Know somebody and can recognise a person that actually has HIV or AIDS, it's far more difficult to say no to them.
And Sarah, you found some other good news.
I did. There is good news in Mexico. So since 2003, as we said, Mexico is supposed to have been providing universal access to antiretroviral therapy. And also in 2007, there was actually a landmark ruling against discrimination against soldiers with HIV.
So basically the army discharged 11 HIV-positive soldiers and denied them access to the military health services, and the Supreme Court said that is unconstitutional. So some excellent progress in Mexico and some excellent images and stories out of the book Tomorrow is a Long Time. You're on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Otom Batar from LGBT Center of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on World Wide Wave.
A huge thank you to our guest tonight, John Cohen, author of the book Tomorrow is a Long Time on HIV in Tijuana. The place you can find the book is tomorrowisalongtime.com.
What a sensible website that is.
It is very sensible.
So unlike
Google,
many of the other ones we have to talk about on this show.
You can buy the iBook in English or Spanish, or you can order a hard copy in the traditional version.
Oh, we can all practice our Spanish.
We'll
some of
need
us more than others.
Yes.
Or some of us can just practice their English. We would like to say thank you to everyone that has contacted us through Facebook. That's Peter, Liz, Kelly, Margaret, Cian, and many more have joined or interacted with us on Facebook. That's W3Joy.
Now, Facebook, we post news stories from all around the world right throughout the week. So you can either like us on Facebook, W3Joy, or follow us on Twitter, which is at W3Joy. And those stories, we churn them out from all over the world.
We've been active while we've been on the show. At least two have gone out while we've been on.
Indeed, indeed. And actually, we put up pictures of some of the pictures from tonight's book on there, so you can get a glimpse of what the book is like.
And there's even pictures of us, so you can work out which one we are.
Yep, well, there's an up, there's a down, I guess. Our podcaster, Mark, as well, he does a great job every week putting our podcasts out at joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
And not forgetting Gordon on the front desk, who's always there to pick up the phone if you call.
Coming up next week, we're off to the Philippines with our very good friends from Kaleidoscope Australia. Dr. Paula Gerber's coming in. And we also grabbed an interview just this afternoon with Jordan. So we haven't been to Jordan before, and this is a fascinating interview. So we'll bring that to you the week after. Catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Hi,
Thanks for listening to another podcast of the World Wide Way, the show that takes you around the world one country at a time. World Wide Way is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australia time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwideway or follow us on Facebook for latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.